So can you hear me? Oh, this aging. I have my distance glasses that are there, so I can't see you if I do this. And so is there anyone who can't hear me? Is this plenty good enough? Oh, great. So when I listen to you, I wish my kids could hear that description of me because it makes me sound like I might know something. And they're quite sure that I don't. And actually, they know me better than probably anybody in this room. So I know something and I don't know something. And being a Zen person, that's just another paradox, you know. So I stopped by 10:45. And it's so interesting to me. I was feeling so anxious about coming here. And just sitting with you, the anxiety has been falling away. And I've written a whole bunch of notes that I'll probably refer to. And my focus is really about anxiety today. I mean, I've really been studying anxiety and insecurity and a wish for stability and security in the face of understanding there is none. And how do I practice with that? And this is a really hot topic for me because recently I was coordinating a weekend event at Zen Center. And just about, I had this picture that was somewhat complicated but very doable. And every bit of the picture fell apart. If there was anything that could be a problem, it was. Not just little things like the cookies for the event being burned that morning. That was a little thing. Not just the little things of the person supposed to give me the list of some speakers not calling me back so that I couldn't give that information to the person putting together the flyer. And then when I finally did get it to her, she got sick and couldn't get that. So the publicity and on and on and on. So, and even one of the major speakers not showing up. So I got to see this really lovely picture of mine crumble like the cookies. Just crumble. And then to see what emerged. It was a wonderful weekend event, but I also got to see really clearly for a couple of weeks before the event anxiety arising, peaking, and then finding a solution to the problem and falling away over and over. So I went in to my teacher and said, I'm absolutely sick of this. I am sick of it. Like, I want to cut it off. No more anxiety for me. And I'm so selfish. Everything is about me. Everything. How am I going to handle this? You know, what are people going to think of me? I didn't get the publicity out. And all about moi. You know, everything. I'm sick of it. When am I going to fall into being a bodhisattva so that I'm, you know, enlightened and I don't have to deal with this? So my teacher said, well, welcome. You know? Welcome to the practice with all of your brothers and sisters in the Maha Sangha. I said, oh. You know, we have these enlightenment experiences with our teacher. I go, oh. And I said, well, all of my brothers and sisters? And she says, yeah, for the last 2,500 years. And so it came alive for me, the human condition and the Buddha sitting down, trying a lot of different kinds of practices. And finally, one day, just simply sitting down. So that's what my comments are today. And I'm going to invite you to have a lot of questions about this, to which I'm not going to give you any answers because I don't have them. The Buddha had teaching to offer us from his sitting. Shakyamuni Buddha sat down and looked at the same questions that we're looking at. And he offered some teachings focused around suffering. Guess what was happening for me was a lot of suffering, you know, wanting to control the suffering. So let's start with there is no security. Simple understanding that many of us see when we're sitting, sometimes just sitting one time. You know, when we breathe out, we also need a breath coming in. We need the in-breath and we need the out-breath. And there's no surety that that's going to keep happening. You know, I mean, that's pretty. If you want to be insecure, you are not assured that when you have that last out-breath, that another one is going to be given. And conditions change. You know, I get a cold, I don't get the breath in so easily. I get a respiratory infection. Sometimes I even need help with an outside apparatus to help me breathe. Conditions keep changing. So my questions, how do I practice with this when I really desire a sense of security? I mean, is there such a thing as having a sense of security in the midst of understanding that there isn't any? You know? So the question is, how do I practice with this? What is my practice? You know, when Gil asked me to speak today, I felt a lot of anxiety arising about speaking to you because I hadn't been here with you before. I created this separation. You know, I'm a Zen person. I do Zen. I haven't done Vipassana for a while. Vipassana people won't understand my form. What will I wear? You know, it's like, oh my God, should I let people know I even cared about what should I wear? Do I have time to buy something new? Do I want to wear something new when I can wear my comfortable globby stuff? I mean, a lot of you, I can tell, have this, you know, what will I say? How will I behave? Can I control what you think of me and how you'll interpret me? So I have a lot of relations in the room, I see. All about me, every bit of it, about me. Even when I was writing the notes, how can I let you know how wise I am when I'm not? And I just am doing what I heard Shakyamuni did when he sat down. I'm just have a lot of faith in the practice because I've been doing it for quite a number of years. And I have a lot of faith that I'll be able to be given some understanding. And that I'm resting in wisdom, and what some of us call wisdom, prajna paramita. You know, just resting in the understanding that wisdom underlies everything. So, even right now, how do I organize my thoughts in a way to offer you what I'm hoping I can offer you? And it's still all about this one fabulous character. Moi. And, you know, I was talking to my friend a few weeks ago, Musham Akita Nash, and this is how transmission happens. Musham said that Diana Lyons said that even Jack Kornfield said that this is the Miss Piggy transmission. You know, this is all about the greediness of wanting to look good. You know, it's all about me. So the point is that this is the human condition, and it isn't about getting rid of insecurity or anxiety. It's about the recognition, the realization of our condition, how it comes about, how to practice with it, and this is very up for me. So some of what we've heard that has been transmitted from Shakyamuni Buddha has been transmitted from person to person. So what I say to you today is just being expressed through me. But what I say to you today has been expressed from person to person to person to person. So it's actually not about me. It's about expressing what I've heard and what I've practiced with. the realization of what the Buddha talked about. And, you know, when he sat down because he recognized suffering. He recognized his own suffering in the face of the suffering that he came in contact with. And arising from his practice, his realization that anxiety and dissatisfaction arise and peaks and falls away, he has offered us in his teaching. He offers us the Four Noble Truths, how suffering happens, and that there's an end to suffering. And he instructs us not to take his word for it, but to check it out ourselves, to have our own experience. Check it out. So suffering, how do we practice with suffering? Do we just notice it and that's the end? Do we find an alternative to suffering? And these are the questions. Is there a respite from anxiety? Is there a beyond suffering? Is there a life to live that is not about me? Is there a life to live that is not about me personally? Shakyamuni brought those questions to practice. It brings most of us to practice. And it continues to keep most of us practicing. These questions around anxiety or fear or nervousness, the human condition, you know. The desire to be awake to possibilities beyond suffering. The desire to be awake to possibilities beyond suffering is what brings us to practice. Is it possible to just be aware of life as it expresses itself through us? Is that a possibility? Without taking it personally, not about me. So there's this desire to be awake and the questions about how we can cultivate awakening in the very midst of our suffering. Many of you have heard sitting upright in the very midst of suffering. So sitting upright and examining this. How we shine that light inward to ourselves as the Buddha suggested we do. So let's look at the self in the concept. In the concept, I didn't mean to say that, I meant to say context. But the concept of the self in the very midst of everything changing. You know, planning weekend events, planning what you're going to wear and then finding it's got a big hole in it. And you can't wear that. Or you could, but then how could you control what everybody thinks about you? And on and on. And when we sit in meditation and we get settled, maybe we even get deeply concentrated, we can begin or again be in touch with the shifting conditions, phenomena arising and phenomena falling away in space. You know, I was very cold this morning when I was leaving San Francisco, and so I put on this sweater, and then I walked in, I was still a little cold, and I sat down, and the heat was on. The thermostat had been set to a place to be sensitive to the temperature, and when it got too cold, according to the thermostat, the heat went on. And it could be that somebody here took their sweater off and put it behind them and it fell on the knees of somebody sitting behind them who was busy congratulating themselves on how peaceful their sitting was. And they felt some annoyance arising in them. You know that really, that how it is when you're really good and you're so peaceful, you can just hardly understand how other people are not. They must not be doing it right. So your sweater falls on their knees, they get annoyed, they say to you very kindly, your sweater fell on my knees. And the person whose sweater fell on their knees feels that irritation, even though it's said in a very, you know, smiley way. And so they get kind of uptight in their body, and when they leave, they're not congratulating themselves on their very peaceful sitting at all. And when they get home and their son hasn't done the dishes for the 18th time, on and on and on and on, everything is interconnected. Everything is changing. We affect each other from the smallest cell, smallest elements of the cell, to the cosmos. Everything shifting, everything shifting. So, I mean, we know this even, you know, in really simple things like seeds and how they need exactly, they need nurturing. I mean, I like to talk about this in really simple, non-heady ways, because it's not heady. We all know this. When we plant a seed and it needs nurturing and it needs light and air and water and the heat from the sun, and then it reaches its potential, and then it falls away to its basic element, the phenomena constantly shifting, constantly changing, becoming something. The mystery of that constantly shifting phenomena. So let's examine space, you know, the mystery, space, the stuff that, the stuff, the non-stuff that we touch when we're sitting oftentimes. By convention, when we look at a rose, we call it a rose. It has a certain shape, different categories of rose, fragrance, color, size, bushes, vines, trees. Roses. We all know what roses look like. We can all conventionally point to a rose and say, it's a rose. And yet, when we put it under a microscope, the rose loses its form. We see that there are photons and movement and space. There's all of this movement within this that just a moment ago we called a rose is no longer a rose. We're looking at all these different parts that make up the rose. And in the same way, when we're sitting in meditation, we come in to this place with a self. And then we sit down, and for maybe 35 minutes, we are, from my perspective anyway, one point of view, we are looking at ourselves under a microscope. That form that we walked into, the center with, falls apart. There's all of these different aspects of the experience in the present moment. And yet, when we leave, we pick up that same form. You know how it goes. I'm sure many of you have been sitting for some time. Some people just sit once and they see this. The lucky ones. Some of us have been sitting for 1,000 years and we are just beginning to get a glimpse. You know. So here we are sitting, seeing the self just fall away. And then we leave and we put on our shoes. And as we put on our shoes, we see this backpack that reminds us of the backpack we bought in the 80s, our very first backpack. The one we bought to go on the camping trip with so-and-so. Oh, he was such a jerk. And why did I even bother going? And on and on and on. And there we are, having picked up the self again. That's not a bad thing. It's not something to get rid of. It's just how the mind seems to work. So under the microscope, the appearance of the rose goes away, and we're looking at all of the elements, the simple photons, movement, space, And what we call rose goes away. Out from the microscope, the rose becomes a rose again. We create that with our mind. And the appearance of solidity of the rose is the creation of the mind. The rose, the self, goes away under examination on its own. It goes away. And we keep bringing it back because that's what minds do. So the question is, how does this work? With the appearance of the self, we sit in meditation and we sit and we're very quiet. And then we pick up this belief again that there is a self, an I. When perception of a self is strong and mindfulness is weak, it's our mind's habit to put the concept of I on our experience and store the experience in memory. Not a bad thing. It's just that the mind has a tendency to do this. And what happens is we begin to cling to the concept of I, and we identify with it. Right? People know what I mean. It becomes a habit. It's like seeing through colored water. Our perceptions through our eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body is colored by the mind's experiences, so that we then are not in the experience itself. We are looking through the colored water of the mind's memories. When we're sitting and we get settled and concentrated, we're able to touch the experience of life. We're able to touch the reality of Dharma, the Dharma. So in the same way that we put a concept on a rainbow, you know, a rainbow is really moisture, light, and other things that I don't know about, but it's definitely not a fixed rainbow. The Big Dipper, the same thing. That's a pattern of a bunch of stuff that we put the concept on. And we call it the Big Dipper. Same with trees, you know, branch, leaves, trunk, bark. There's no such thing as a solid tree. You know, it rises and falls away. The same with the self. You know, the self is an illusion. It's a concept. Li is just eyes, ears, nose, throat, tongue, a bunch of cookies, and mind. Right? All of that arose because of conditions. And all of this will fall away. The cookies will definitely crumble. So the mind has this tendency to bifurcate, to grasp and construct our reality, and the constructs become habituated. And without realizing it, we've created a sense of solid, separate self. And as soon as there's a self we have to protect. Right? As soon as there's a self, we have to protect the self. You know, a question I ask myself often is, what self am I protecting? You know, there isn't even just one self. And in Zen, we talk about saving all sentient beings. So I look to save all sentient beings, all live beings, all of these different beings in this body, mind. just as we notice that the form of the rose falls away to uncover the shifting phenomena in space. When we study ourselves, we also see that in ourselves. And we're phenomena in space. And when we're sitting, I mean, one of the wonderful gifts of sitting is that we begin to loosen this habit, this creation of solidifying a self. We begin to loosen that up so that even when we're not sitting, we begin to understand that everything is impermanent. So how do we find stability and take refuge in impermanence? We have time to do, I was hoping we would, to do a little exercise. Get yourself in a comfortable position, and if you're used to closing your eyes when you meditate, I want to do a very brief guided meditation. If you're in the mood. And start to notice your breathing in as the in-breath comes to you. You don't have to do anything. The in-breath will come. Notice when you're breathing in, being aware of the in-breath. And when you're breathing out, being aware of the out-breath. And noticing in particular that place where the in-breath becomes the out-breath. Some people will notice a gap between the in-breath and out-breath, the space between in and out. Noticing how the breath in a very short time begins to grow a little slower and is lighter and deeper. Just noticing the breath, inclining the mind towards open-hearted acceptance of impermanence, of shifting phenomena. Just inclining the mind towards noticing that, towards space, allowing us to see through our perceptions and our constructions and memories. Just inclining the mind, and when your mind starts to wander, come back to the place where the in-breath shifts to an out-breath. Inclining the mind to space and stillness, and allowing oneself to receive no self. The stillness. A space. A rest in space between. Letting go and allowing the construction of self to fall away. When we're experiencing the body-mind in this present moment as impermanent, we are connecting with the truth of how things are. Dharma, the natural law of how things arise and fall away. Just being with that place. If you're experiencing difficulty, concentrate on that difficulty. Surround that difficulty with space. Allow it to float. Don't try to get rid of it. Just notice the space around the difficulty so that the difficulty can pass through, the space. Notice that the breath is here. There's nothing you have to do. Just relax and soften. Relaxing is letting go, settling, just being, just being without doing. Noticing that phenomena arise and release themselves without doing anything. No need to grab onto an I, to the idea of an I. It's allowing yourself to dwell, to live in the space of constantly changing conditions, phenomena. When we're doing this, we're in touch with the natural, innate awareness of reality. This is what underlies and supports awareness. Relaxing and resting in reality. This is releasing, allowing, undoing our habits without doing anything. Undoing our habits without doing anything. Just being. Bringing forth this awareness, cultivating this in meditation, is a mark of freedom. Bringing forth this awareness is a mark in freedom. Suppose the air said to itself one day, "I am tired, dead tired of my name. I no longer want even my initial to sign the carnation's curl, the rose's ripple, the river's fine folds, the sea's graceful flowing and the dimple that laughs in the sail's cheek. I rise from the soft, slumbering surfaces housing my sleep. I flow from hanging vines. I slip through the blind, arched windows of towers. Already thinness itself, I turn sharp-cornered streets, entering broken and wounded by doorways, long halls that lead to green patios where jetting water, sweet and hopeless, reminds me what I wish for. I look and look for a name for myself, but I don't know how. Isn't there any breeze or breath able to lift into view the word that would name me? More and more tired, I look for a sign, a something or someone to take my place, who would be like me and live like me in the fresh memory of things, who would be moved by cradle and cradle song, who would endure with the same trembling, the same breath that was mine the first morning of my life, when light said to me, 'Fly, you are the air.' Suppose the air said to itself one day." And so coming back from this formal meditation to the informal meditation of being together in this room, some of you needing to open your eyes. My friend asked me in the midst of this weekend event that felt like I was constantly standing in quicksand. She asked the question, "How do you find a practice that offers respite, a refuge in the midst of this desire for a sense of security in constantly changing phenomena?" And I sat with that question and sat and sat. My practice points to the present moment where I can drop into the nature of things as they are and touch reality. And it's with this practice that the mind is inclined to receive stillness and rest in space. and no self. And anxiety falls away. Bringing forth this awareness and meditation is a wonderful way to cultivate bringing forth this awareness is a mark of freedom. When we have that glimpse, that taste, you may notice that you're free. So now there's time for comments. There's a few minutes for comments, and I'm going to ask you to save your questions. I'm going to ask you to save your questions for yourself. Because we all have to study our own questions. Now, I can tell you what I've found out about myself, and I'm doing the best I can to do that with you this morning. And but we all have to study our own questions. Keep each other company. Take refuge in each other. Take refuge in the Buddha and the Dharma and the Sangha. And the poem I read, I don't want to forget to say, is by Rafael Alberti. It was written in Spanish and translated to English by Mark Strand from a book that's out of print called The Owl's Insomnia. And I got that poem because I said to a friend, I'm looking and looking and looking for a poem that actually fits what I'd like to offer to people. And she said, what are you talking about? What do you want to bring to people's attention? And I told her, and she emailed me this poem. And this is taking refuge in Sangha. This is Sangha. This is, we need each other, you know. And so I want to thank you for your attention, for your practice helping me practice, so that I could sit with you and see again and again this anxiety fall away. Just over and over and over again. It's very quiet. Do you feel the stillness and the quietness? This simple practice, sitting down together. In Pali, we chant, I take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Do people know it? Buddham Saranam Gacchami? Do some people know it? This might be a time to, what it is in Pali is we're taking refuge in what some people think about as the perfect teacher, Buddha, and the perfect teaching, Dharma, and the perfect Sangha, the people that we are practicing with. You know, perfect, not meaning perfect like we're going to get a grade, but the exquisiteness of this practice together. So maybe you'll join with me in chanting this. In Zen, we do a lot of chanting. So we don't usually chant this in Pali. I do this every morning before I start my work and when I end my work. So please join me if you can. Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Dhammam Saranam Gacchami, Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Sangham Saranam
gacchami tatyampi buddham sarnam gacchami tatyampi dhammam sarnam gacchami tatyampi sangham sarnam gacchami.
Bow to each other at Zen Center out of deep respect and regard and gratitude for our practicing together. Very grateful for your practice. It supports the practice here. Thanks. So I think there's about 1 minute. Well, how's that for timing?
Perfect.
So there's actually no time for questions. That wasn't purposeful. I was going to make that request of you, and I did. But I'll hang around for a while. And is this where we stop? Is this how we do it? Did I do it right? Am I okay? Here I am back to it's all about me. Thank goodness for sitting.